That's tape five, Tom Neary. You're talking about Pepper Pot the House, Tom.
That's right. So, these Pepper Pot houses are coming round the way, and every day the smoke's coming out of this chimney. So, the officers assume that the Germans are occupying the house and there's a resistance point, so consequently they thought they'd warm it up from, so they kept putting the water bombs onto it and showers, so that's where it got its name, Pepper Pot House.
Yeah.
All peppered. So, eventually, they found out that the 59th Div was attacking on the flank, which included the 50th Lancer Regiment. So they thought it would be a good idea to the colonel, well, the guns are fine and then the support would tell it that we would clear the area of Pepper Pot House and make it more secure. So when the attack went in there, we went in on Pepper Pot House. Now, as we were going in, one small plane came over German and dropped a flaming bomb, which had killed some indeed company. So we got into the house and we cleared it, dug in around it, but when we got in there, we found out the lady of the house and a maid with her, an old lady, two old ladies together.
Mm.
And what they did, at night time, they were down in the cellars from what they understood they said, and when the Germans were all in the house, and then when they were through and it come dawn, they came to cook themselves something, and of course that's when the chimney smoked, and that's when they got the bombardment.
So when you got there were no soldiers in the house itself, but there were soldiers around the house,
that's right.
Germans.
Yeah. Yep. So we cleared the area, and took it over, and then when we cleared it, it was all clear, and company took it, consolidated it there, and we took it back where we were, right along this edge road.
Yeah.
And after a period there, along decided to put out the food, add casualties with mortar bombs and what have you. They decided to get put it out for a break of 48 hours. And if my memory serves me right, we pulled out and the place they took it to was Moon.
Mm.
Now, the Moon was an excellent place to have a rest because it was right against 53rd gun lines. So we got there, and there had been trenches dug all around, so we were all around the field, and we were cleaning up and having a wash and change, and it come night time, till light, but I started dishing out the old industry in these tins, what they heated in the hot water gave you, and treacle pudding.
Mm.
So we'd had this vegetable soup, whatever it was, meat soup, stew, and then the duck was to follow, pudding. So around me, it's just going dark. Time when you were in the line, when you were stood two. Drone, plane order. I was down comes the chandeliers, very light dropping, and then it really warmed up. Down come the bombs. Hitting the guns exploding, fires all over the place. Diving for cover, shouts and screams and all sorts of going on.
Mm.
But when we passed over, cleared, they found the bunkers, and then they found out that Sam Jackson, the single sergeant, come running to quarters. And I heard about this afterwards because I was there, company, that the single officer, Frank Johnson, was missing. So they went to where he was and dug out of him, blown in. Where he was, so he was smothered. So we lost the signal.
He was suffocated in his trench or dugout, something.
Yeah, suffocated.
Yeah.
So we found out eventually after the boy who was buried at a place called Groovy.
Yeah.
So he was a fine chap, with him for some years, so we lost him, and we lost a great friend.
Yeah, because I mean, that was going to happen now many times over the next months, isn't it,
yeah,
to you and to everybody at Tom? But around that time, there were some fierce battles being fought around an area called Hill 112, wasn't there?
Right.
And this was close to that area, wasn't it?
Yes, it was great. When the couple over,
yeah.
So, what they decided then... so the next day we had a call and he said, well, you clean up, get blankets and all the rest of it. Much room was there, clean up, blankets, and this all that. But anyhow, they did what they were told.
Yeah. I suppose you thought, is it really necessary?
That's right.
Yeah.
And I kind of leave you alone, you do the rest of that. But of course, I used to take your mind off things and make you, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm maintain the radio and the telephone and the rest of it. So then the order came, we could go up again to a new position. I will probably have missed one or two that wasn't really important. Anyhow, the place we were going to, when I found out, was called Bougie, B-O-U-G-Y.
Yeah.
And it was a salient in the typical Bacard country. So we marched on this road in the way, and because we came to this main road, a straight road, not a main road, no dust, no shells. We crossed the road, went down this one track like an ocean bend, where there was a mill, and round again, and it was dead German about buried. So we came onto the bottom of the hill, and then started climbing again. And as he climbed, over on the right forward was a chateau. So, coming dark, so when we were halfway up this, it started mortaring and shelling, so we went along this long wall and sheltered behind the wall because we weren't ready to move in until such time when we should change over. Of course, some got a flap on with the heavy bombardment that was going on. We came out again, up the hill, past the chateau, was headquarters to the Corps and some support company. And the A Company, big group that was in the fourth position, marching up, we came into the village of Bougie.
The chateau is the Bougie, is the chateau at Bougie?
That's right. Yeah. The chateau at Bougie is on its own,
yeah.
Roughly about half a mile away from the village,
yeah.
Of Bougie.
Yeah.
So it was night time when we took over the N-City. The Scottish regiment was coming out, we were in.
Yeah.
Two and six and so on.
Into their positions.
Yeah. So we took over, and of course the carriers which are coming on the route, the transport, started moving into the chateau. Well, they're all right, I understand, so a lot of got in, but when the signal vehicles from across the scale and the others, the Zerries heard it, so over comes the 8 programme,
yeah.
It landed right in the chateau grounds, and there were loads of casualties.
The hate program, that's their shelling, mortar or
right, mortar
or shelling.
Yeah. So there's a lot of casualties and a lot out to shooting for two.
Yeah.
Single sergeant and others and all. So when it came dawn, it was right, farm buildings and the village buildings, houses, were there. 30 yards away was a jerry behind the flaming edge.
Yeah.
So he was in a salient, so in other words, he was surrounded on three sides, like a finger.
Yeah.
So he sided Major Griffin. We would move down, and it fell down to the bottom of this hollow, and an acre would be dug in round there, which we did. We realised when it was done, on our right side of the other edge was this sunken lane, which afterwards was called the Sniper's Walk along the lane.
Yeah.
We christened it.
Yeah.
So the other company then moved in to where we'd been, I think it's Charlie Company. So was in this salient with their company right at the tip of the salient and this company around the side. So of course, these Lancers not being satisfied, they wanted to know where the enemy was, which only does the answer anyhow.
Yeah.
So they kept shelling and mortar bombing, the small mortars. So the lines kept getting blown. Oh, so they laid the lines from our HQ, laid it to us, and the corporal that was leading the hours, we were called Oggy one. So he's getting this room 5 bar gate, mending, joining the cable together. And his finger off, and he shot his finger off.
Oh, right.
The sniper, you know?
Yeah.
So, of course, he was out casualty. And he came back when the war was over, just before.
So that was enough to keep him out for the rest of the war, pretty much?
The campaign was over when he came back.
Nearly over. So that was a bit of, in one way, that was a bit of good news for him.
So, we're down in the bottom, keep breaking the lines, so we have to keep up and repairing them. Because that's the job. So we leave one similar in the trench. Harvey's and me mostly went up and did the repairs. So repairing it this day, I done the repairs and setting off back. Over comes the shower, it got right on the trench what we were in, well, what we would have been in. balance he was in it, probably had a cupping on the top. So it blew the thing in, but he didn't down, he was lucky, he only liked one.
Yeah.
He comes out, he's as black as a Kentucky minstrel.
Yes.
So we have a joke about nothing. So we consolidated again. All of us went out then, patrols had to go out and find out just where the jelly are and what they were doing.
Mm.
Two patrols went out, one from A Company, on the German speaking sergeant called Allen, along a fellow with him called Fleming. So they went out, but he got spotted. The wireless were what they got, no use. Yep, so they had to come back.
Mm.
The other patrol went out much stronger when it was dark with Major Lake from D Company. He went out with his patrol to go through the cornfields as they got through the edges and find out just where the jellies were.
Mm.
So we could, you know. So he's going into the cornfields and they had rides cut in them, and along these rides they had machine gun on fixed lines.
Yeah.
So if anybody.
So if anybody crossed those cap parts,
yeah,
they could see them and fired down straight lines.
So they were going across one of these rides and they spotted most of the positions of the Germans, but they hadn't seen this one. They're crossing the ride and they said they were seen.
Mm.
Of course, they got opened up on.
Mm.
So someone was wounded, knocked the shells. They took one of the canisters and it was a prosperous and set fire to the corn.
Yeah.
So they did get away from it and they could.
Yeah.
Can you stop it for a moment?
I can, yeah. Okay, Tom, that was a comfort break, we'll call that, shall we?
Yeah.
And but we were just, you were just at Bougie or that area in cornfields.
Right. So Major Lake took this patrol out through the edges to go up to the cornfields to find out the positions of the German strong positions. And as he went forward, it was night time, as he was going forward, through the cornfield, these rides got, and along these rides, they had machine guns on fixed lines. So that he, more or less in the cornfield, keeping them all, this patrol, found out where all the German positions was.
Mm.
He had to start through the cornfield, and he could see. But he was crossing this one, and there was one post that they missed. And as he crossed, they opened fire on them,
mm.
because someone was wounded, they dragged him into the cornfields, and one had got it on the phosphorus bomb yard, and he set fire to the corn.
Yeah.
So they had to get out of it. They didn't think he was to get to prison and bring them in.
Mm.
It was a real cock-up. So they didn't. So they had to drag them in to the corn and get back.
It didn't set fire to the man as well?
Yes, most of them.
Right.
So I think they put it off in him all.
Yeah.
Put it off, and they had to get him out of the corn. So of course, they knew where they were and they were walking down that area.
Yeah.
So they had to pull out.
Yeah.
So it comes dark. It was dark then. Got back, so of course it was a good time to buy communication, we knew what had happened. And everything went quiet, and you could hear this voice. Brian Binnibrain, help, help.
All right.
And I knew the voice, it can't be in the regiment for a while, and it was the man that was talking, it must have been B Company, because he was Terry Doyle, his friend Tony Doyle, and I knew his voice, and you could hear. I didn't know where he was, I only one man who could rape him. It was idea to be a deep one guy, but B must have been out there and all, and he was calling. He said, "We can't. If we go out, you can't find where he is now, we don't know. If I'd have known that you can't tell him, it's impossible
to
tell, you know." And he helped, and he went quieter and quieter.
He would have been out on this patrol earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his name's on the board.
On the.
You know.
Yes. Yes.
Never found him. So that was the thing.
They never found. So this poor chap that was wounded in this cornfield that you heard calling out, you couldn't get to because it was dark and nobody could get to it.
I didn't know where he was exactly, because I come there.
Yeah.
But I could hear the call, and you're there and you want to do something, and we're forbidden to do it anyhow.
Mm.
That was one thing, no account.
But the man died.
He
died, presumably. And that was in the middle of German positions at that stage.
That's right.
That time.
He said the Germans would be there, that they were pulling in a lot.
Yeah.
But it was, and it went on.
I guess the Germans perhaps may have buried the man where he was.
Yeah, he would have thought he'd put him back somewhere, but we don't know because his name's on the VM memorial.
Yes.
Terence Doyle. Mm. I didn't know as part of his 3386 in his number, so he must have been enlisted in 1937, something like that. Mm. Great father came from Manchester. So I knew him quite well with being in Beacon before I came to Signals.
Yes.
In fact, he was in the platoon where I was a corporal. So.
Yeah.
So.
So very, very upsetting and off-putting at that moment in time.
Yeah.
That's right. Just stop this. Okay. Yeah, that must have been bad for you then, Tom. At that stage. So that was Bougie, or that was all around Bougie.
Night for me. So morning calling made a good sense to me. Here, you're on LOB.
You'd never heard of that LOB before.
I should have heard it, but with things going on, you don't take notice.
Yeah.
I didn't. So I was left out of battling then. It would appear that the battalion was earmarked for an attack. Now, I understand that LOB, there's so many left out. Oh, he said to me, you're on LOB, here, you deserve it. I don't know what about. You know?
Mm.
But it appears LOB is that someone is took out when there's an attack imminent, so if the captain is heavy, oxygen key personnel are there to replace the men that's been moved or killed.
Mm.
So in other words, as an advanced signal and that, I would have took over off the court or whoever.
Yeah.
So the took us thought to go. So went up through this sloping field, and when we got to the top, where we've been repairing the line, the gate was. They wanted to run across it to about 30 yards to get to the house for cover.
Yeah.
Of course, they got the first lot there across, and we're going across, and they opened fire at the Smithers. They were only 30 yards away or so, and they're whizzing all around us. So I went edge first over the edge into this lane. Not only me, they went, you know,
yeah.
But I was there, and I think, anyhow, I'm down, and I'm in there on my knees, I have my ground sheet, and I must have got my ground sheet under my knees, and I'm trying to get up my camera, I couldn't move it, and then so I realised what was happening,
yeah.
And the bullets are flying past me, trying to get up grass, you know.
Yeah.
So I doubled up, and I got out of it.
Mm.
We walked down near to the chateau, where the troops had come from the airstrip. And he took us back to a station outside of the So we had a big right there, and there was A Company lads, and they were together, and we were going to go to a meal in the air salon. So this lad began me, and he said, hey, look here, Tom. On the A Company. And when he opened his mess tin, he opened it, there were four bullets inside.
Inside the mess tin?
Yeah, yeah. The flat nose bullets, they like we fired the same gun, you know. And it's gone through his back into his mess tin. And we're quite plain.
So he must have felt a very lucky person at that stage. Yeah. So those bullets, to stay in his mess tin without injuring him, must have been at the extent of their travel almost.
Yeah. Well, I think the range was about 30 yards, as I told you, for a Smiter.
Okay.
Which is equivalent to a Sten, which is a much better weapon. So, I also had with me the Lance Jack from out of one of the Texans, Hartley. So, another canvas there and a bit of work would be made for ourselves. A night's sleep. I went back, joined the battalion back after 24 hours. When we got back, the attack would never sent in any case, so might as well have gone.
Yeah.
So we moved from there. If you look at the top of when you're top of Bougie, where the fight was, on the left shoulder, you can see a place called Gabarus.
Yes, you've heard of Gabarus.
So we went from there to Gabarus, where we took over from the Island Light Infantry.
Before Gabarus, Tom, was there any much sign of armour around there? Either British or German armour?
Yeah, remember in Bougie, the tanks came up and they were in support of us. Because when we were at night time, they opened up the boat and there were traces going open, firing and coming in all directions.
Mm.
And of course, in between the traces, other light boats and shells.
Mm.
And if there were any trouble at all, the guns would fly across from the tanks,
falling
the 25 pounders.
Yeah.
But while we were at Bougie, it was another, I should have got from Sally Company, attack had to go in, and this attack had to drive through the edge, in, the tanks would fire off it point blank, then cut off, it, to the rear with the 25 pounders firing quick barrages. The patrol, the fighting patrol under Lieutenant Harper, had to get into the edge, through the edge, get a prisoner, get back quick.
Yes.
And he did it.
Yeah.
The British guys were that stunned, he got through and he snapped them and they brought them back.
Harper, is that the Canadian Harper?
Canadian chap, the only one that came back alive was the old guy, the old Ken.
Kenland one.
Mm. Mm. So, that was a good thing. The brigade was quite pleased with this idea. They found the identity of what they were. So then we moved, to, as I said, to Gabras, and we took it to Gabras, and then it was all 1-2 area again.
Yes, sir.
So we was all this hill, we kept getting shelled, and if you looked across it, you was into a place called Everice.
Yes.
And Everice, there was nothing left, you could see the base wood in the church, there was nothing left. Mm. So while we was there a few days, they had one platoon on the forward spokes, and they got the hay to keep the, because you couldn't see up the other side of the hill, and we were just over the ground with the radio.
Mm.
So they got it a bit rough.
The significance of Hill 112, I presume, because I don't know about these things, but I presume that because it's a hill and it's fairly high up, both sides wanted it for observation.
Yeah, depends on it.
Yeah.
So it was two or three times. So, if my memory's right again, while we was there, which we would be getting then, we must have been getting to August.
Yeah, end of July I would have thought, Tom, somewhere sort of around there.
Message came through that we were changing brigades. For one reason or another, these tankers were being moved from 71st Infantry Brigade to 158 Brigade, which consisted then of, I'm not sure I still remember, but one was something like the 6th Royal Fusiliers and, say, the 5th Ross Regiment, the both territorial battalions. And the one of the Fusiliers moved in, working up World Fishing Weaver in 71st Brigade.
Was it something to do with the fact that they didn't want brigades to be totally Welsh or totally...
Yeah, well, they wouldn't, that's right.
Mm.
But of course, it's recognised that in this 50 word Welsh division, there was many Englishmen as there were Welshmen.
Englishmen fighting for Welsh
battalions.
Of course, yeah.
I would say the other two brigades, 160 Brigade, 158 Brigade, and 71st Infantry Brigade, of course, was all Scottish, Oxfordshire Infantry,
yeah,
and the East Lancashire.
Yeah.
So then we came over and so in the Welsh Div, there was the Solar Battalions, the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, Welsh Regiment, Monmouthshire Regiment,
yeah,
and then there was East Lancs, South, East Lancs, Oxfordshire, at Islay.
Yes.
So, for various reasons, and for communication not to mix up 6th or 7th battalions, Royal Welsh Fusiliers, it simplified it and it made it better, of course, that there wasn't all Welsh fans that was in all together.
Yes, yes.
Especially not.
Mm.
So we joined the 158 Brigade, the place, it's not like Cuban Road, as much as it was called.
Mm.
And we were only there till the morning after, and we moved off then, but we moved up eventually through sweet smelling country, there was no sign of any corruption there, till we landed again close by the banks of the River Orne.
Yeah, so I would guess then, Tom, from the way you described that all that activity around Hill 112 has now pretty much come to an end.
Yes, it does.
And to our advantage.
That's right.
Yeah.
But lead dead all over the place, you know.
Yeah.
In the fields and under roads. There's been much under roads carried over town for many. So we were there for the officer of the Flood, Colonel Burton, and waiting for orders to cross the river on. Now there's one bridge there, and the fighting was so severe on the other side, which included the Warwickshire Regiment, the I think it was Northumberland Regiment, and the 15th Lancashire's.
Yeah. This is around now, early August, would it be? Yeah.
So, we're only on 12 hours, so couldn't, it was so fluid, so badly attacked, we couldn't move because I understand that the colonel went down with the adjutant and he was waiting for news from the Warwickshire Regiment and Northants, and they didn't know if everything was in a shambles like war is when everything's so fluid. So eventually, it occurred that we had orders to move over. But when we moved over the bridge, there were quite a big party of high officials there. I think the divisional commander and corps commander, which was Ritchie, was there. We passed through them going up, and of course it was going dark. So we had orders to carry on. We carried on up the slope up there from the river forward. The night, and there was a skirmish, and we eventually we settled down around these hours till dawn came.
Yeah, was that when you crossed the Orne at that stage? Was that at a place called something like Groupier or?
Could have been, yeah. I heard the name, but I can't.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So, yes, it would be. When dawn came, we were in this hollow. Around and doing all over the place, dead tanks and whatever. So our stretcher bearers, like they do, went out, tidied up, and getting the names, asked them what they do, and the shelling was quiet at that moment, there was nothing going on. So the main stretcher bearer, all along, but was across the Port Therese Road, I'd known from 1939. And so he's going around, and I'm sat on the edge of this hollow, and he came to me and he said, sat down here and he said, "Dummy," I said, "I don't like this. What's to do, Walter? Just look at this. It's my namesake. I don't like it." So when I looked at it, it had on Lieutenant Walter Eastwood, and he was Royal Tank Regiment, birthday 21st of April 1925.
Yeah.
So I didn't say anything because his birthday was my birthday.
All right.
And the namesake was Walter Eastwood, like the secretary of the Walter Mint.
So this is a dead person.
Yeah,
that officer. Had the same name as your friend.
Yeah,
and the same birthday as you.
Yeah. So I never said anything, and I said, "Oh, give over all the bother about that." It's anyhow, he did what he had to do, and we advanced again. And we didn't assault meet much resistance at that stage till this place we came to, and we all assembled there. And well, I was there. If we weren't serving it right again. This lad came up to me, and I've seen it before, and I may got me to the place here. He came from Paddy, and we were called Fred Long.
Yeah.
Only 3 miles from me. And
you've not mentioned that name on this tape.
No. So, this one came from me, company, and he's an old, he comes from a few streets from where I lived in Acton, and all his family, and the family knew me, were great friends, really. And he was called Derek Large. "Come here, hello, there's a lad here from Paddington, come to me, come in, see him." I said, "Okay," because we was waiting for me. So I rode up and we sat down the roundabout. So when they get there, who's there but Corporal Tickle, Peter Tickle, an old friend of mine, and his friend Long. So I talked to him and said, I didn't know him, but I knew his sister. And I said, "Is your sister Mary Long?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "You live on Stockbridge?" He said, "Yeah." So it talking together, it helps, I suppose, one another. But 2 days after he was killed.
Yes.
So his name's on the list of the fallen.
Where on the monuments again, sir?
No, it's not on the monument.
Right.
But he's in the regimental group, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Where was he killed? Do you know where he was killed or circumstances?
Right, just prior to, before Baobu.
Just before Baobu.
Before Baobu, yeah.
So well, yeah, we know Baobu is always 12th, so this would be maybe a few days before that.
I'd be able to see it.
Yes, yeah.
And over there, an notice came that we had to get on these pen roads where we were, and one company had to take this place called Baobu. But it was cancelled again, which was very fortunate. Next thing is, the order came through that on the following day the East Lancashires had to take a place called Bois en Boue. Whether or not the Royal Welsh Fusiliers had took a place called Fresney.
Yeah.
So Big Barber went up through the night, all routes and everything, setting it all. Colonel Burden sorted it all out, sent the intelligence section and the pioneers making their way through this forest. And then we set and other sat wrestlers all on net and we marched through the forest. And we marched an hour or two, always every